Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. It is the 11th of July. The sun is rising and the tomb is empty yet again today. We start out the show here on Faith Radio Mornings with the central truth of our Christian faith, because in the midst of all of the uncertainty and the anxiety of our world, the fact that that tomb is empty means that even death itself has been beaten and all things are under the feet of Jesus, our Savior, the one we follow, the one we worship. And so regardless of what comes in life, there is always hope and always future in his beautiful kingdom. That's true in Minnesota. It's true in North and South Dakota. It's true in Wisconsin. It's true everywhere around our country that in the division and the fractions that are happening in our culture, that we can stay united on that. So welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Logan Rausch on the sound and board. Good morning, Logan.
Good morning, Peter.
Paul Perreault in the newsroom, and he just does a great job keeping the news flowing for us this morning, helping us kind of get into the conversations. And he helps also book the great guests for the show along with Rachel Sutton. And I just love coming in each morning with the list of guests that are part of this show and the sort of sane conversation that they can offer. We're going to have Adam Carrington on here in just a little bit, who comes on very regularly. He'll walk us through the Supreme Court justice announcement of Monday night and just thinking through the importance of Kavanaugh's decision to enter the Supreme Court. And we just got these guests that are hopefully encouraging and hopeful as we continue to follow Jesus. And it is important because you never know what's going to happen day in and day out. And one of our affiliates in Madison, Wisconsin, it's exactly that reality. We're out of Sun Prairie nearby. There was an explosion last night at 7:15 in the evening. It just demolished some of the Main Street buildings. And it sounds like at this point we don't have reports if people have been killed, but certainly some of the rescue operation, the firefighters and police officers have been wounded. You just never know, Logan, what's going to happen day in and day out.
Right. As of now, like you said, we don't really know the conditions of anyone. So far, we only know that people are injured. Hopefully, that doesn't turn into deaths. And so, obviously, right now, prayer is necessary. I mean, to just really be with the policemen, the first responders, and everyone who are taking care of these people, because a gas leak just comes out of nowhere. I mean, yeah. It really, really does. And so, just the prayer for this terrible event that hopefully doesn't turn any worse for families and friends.
Yeah, we might live in different cities, different states, but it really does unite us together that we're following Jesus. And I think about in that early Mediterranean world, as Paul was planting churches all across Philippi and Thessalonica and Corinth and Ephesus and these different places, that though they were disparate cities, what held them together was that they're following Jesus, and they could stay united in that. And one thing that Paul encouraged them to do was to pray for their brothers and sisters and be there for them. And so just know in Madison of course, in Sun Prairie, that our prayers are with you this morning as your brothers and sisters in faith. And we hope that there is safety there and there's compassion there that comes only from God. So thanks for joining us again this morning here on Faith Radio Mornings. We will take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Adam Carrington to talk about the announcement of Brett Kavanaugh and his appointment to the Supreme Court. It is just about 9 minutes past the hour, and that music always makes me so happy because it means that Adam Carrington is going to be joining us. He comes on to the show often to talk about the political scene, and in this case, what's going on with the Supreme Court justice announcement. And Adam, I know it's the summer off time for you, but I suspect that the next 9 to 10 weeks are going to be pretty busy. There's going to be headlines coming out each day. So you've agreed to join us every morning, right, for this foreseeable future? You're just going to be here?
Yes. In fact, I think I'm going to move up to Minnesota, and I heard that you're just going to get me a cot to sleep in nearby, just in case.
We will spare no expense for you, Adam. We might even have a cup of gas station coffee for you with that cot.
Yeah, I don't know if how many of the listeners may remember the O.J. Simpson trial, where just all day they would have Greta Van Susteren and Roger Cossack were the two lawyers that just all day sat on CNN, and every time they'd go to a break, analyzed it. I hope that these hearings don't drag on that long, but I imagine there's going to be some people in that boat with that having to do analysis that long.
Well, we expect you to be ready 24/7, just be streaming. You can be the new Greta Van Susteren in this situation. So your thoughts are always so welcome in this situation. And of course, one of the things that seems to be happening over the last 24 hours are the Democrats are figuring out their already pre-designed message of resistance. And I think there was some uncertainty about how to resist, but it seems to be becoming clear that one of the issues is about health care. And so we've got a quick comment here from Chuck Schumer that will queue up, and I would love your comments on that as the Democrats are trying to form their resistance.
If we can convince the American people that Judge Kavanaugh on the court would lead to the repeal of the Affordable Care Act and women's reproductive rights.
So those seem to be, I mean, it's the Affordable Care Act and it's, you know, Roe versus Wade, which we could maybe talk about in a second part of our segment. But what are you understanding to be sort of the message of resistance happening right now?
I think that especially the reproductive rights one, which, you know, abortion is a major point that they're trying to argue. Although I've also been hearing that other issues such as union rights, gay rights, and other issues that in many ways define large elements of the Democratic electoral coalition, really they're trying to touch on all of them. So I think that you're seeing some different messaging to different people. I think the health care worry is being sent to more moderate and persuadable voters. And I think that comes from the fact that a lot of polling says that immigration and health care are the two biggest issues, and Democrats believe they have a better chance of getting moderate voters with their health care plan. So we're going to see everything that could come out. I think another thing you're going to see relitigated is George W. Bush's presidency and Ken Starr's investigation of Bill Clinton. Kavanaugh was involved with both, and neither ended very popularly. And so I think that those parts of his biography are also going to come up in addition to these claims of what he would decide.
Yeah, and it's the reality is I think, and if you just look at it objectively, that he's had a pretty incredible legal career. He is obviously coming out of some of the best universities and really a well-respected judge. We have the president saying some things as he announced the appointment. So listen into this.
He is considered a judge's judge, a true thought leader among his peers. He is a brilliant jurist with a clear and effective writing style, universally regarded as one of the finest and sharpest legal minds of our time.
And that, again, just from an objective basis, I think regardless if you agree with his decisions on the Constitution, that would be considered probably pretty true about Kavanaugh, right?
Yeah, there is no debate that he is one of the smartest, most capable and accomplished legal minds within sort of the right-leaning or originalist camp that is out there, and he has been on the short list for a president to appoint even before Donald Trump ran for president. There was a headline that some people have pulled out that in 2012, a fake headline saying Roe v. Wade has been overturned, and that saying that would happen if Romney won, and the fifth judge they listed was a Justice Kavanaugh, the same guy. So really, people are not going to be able to sink him based on his lack of experience or his lack of pedigree or his lack of intelligence. I think he's going to really shine with his intellect during the hearings and during meetings with senators. It really is going to come down to questions of outcomes and approach to the Constitution, and I think the Democrats realize that given his resume.
Well, I think on that question of the approach to the Constitution, I'm not as steeped in understanding how the Constitution can be interpreted as you are. So I would love to hear your thoughts. Where's the tension here? What's the difference between a textualist or originalist on the Constitution versus maybe other ways of interpreting it? It seems like those are the battle lines right there.
Right. And I think that the ultimate underlying question is there a distinct judicial power? In other words, people talk about legislating from the bench. Well, there, I think a lot of people who aren't originalists or textualists inherently ultimately believe that there really is nothing other than legislating from the bench. It's judges imposing their will, and we hope they impose their will the way we think they should, and that really that's just reality. What originalists and textualists come back and say is, no, there is a distinct judicial power. It is different than lawmaking. And while lawmakers express themselves through will, they impose their will or the will of the people that elected them, judges exercise what's called judgment. Federalist 78 talked about this. And what that means is judges don't impose their will. They apply what the text of the statute or the Constitution, and they try to apply the text or statute in the way that the people who originally passed it meant it. And that's where you get textualism, looking at the text, and where you get originalism, looking at that text in a way that brings out what the original plain meaning was. And they believe that that is doable in a way I think those who oppose it believe they're just covering up their partisan beliefs. And I think that's a genuine difference. A lot of people accuse the other side of bad faith. I really think that's a genuine disagreement on what judges can and can't do.
Super helpful. We're going to take a short break here, Adam. And when we come back, we'll have some quotes from Dianne Feinstein, one of the senators, again, just talking about some of the resistance. The one downside, perhaps, of the Kavanaugh pick is that he has a pretty long track record, having served for a very long time, that maybe they can pick out some of the minutiae of his decisions and resist across a number of lines. So I'd love to get into that a little further with you. Thanks again for joining us. We'll take a short break and be back with more from Adam Carrington. It is just about 19 minutes past the hour. We are joined by Adam Carrington, who has graciously agreed to be on call 24/7 over the next 10 weeks. So, Adam, get some rest. It could be a busy time for you here coming up.
Yes. And I need to tell my wife that I'm taking a leave of absence from parenting and husbandry work. The question is, will she notice?
your commitment to the show, Adam. We are so grateful around here for that. So we've got a quote actually from Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is, again, as the Democrats are trying to figure out and lining up the resistance here, there's the sense in which they're trying to position Kavanaugh as well outside the mainstream and being sort of this conservative right-wing activist. So let's listen to her quote again, and then I'd love to get your comments on that.
His record indicates that if confirmed, he would be among the most conservative justices in Supreme Court history. His views are outside the mainstream, and there's every reason to believe he would overturn Roe.
So again, this is, we're commenting in all morning, right? But we're starting to see the messaging back and forth that's setting us up for the confirmation fight. What are you hearing in her comments there?
I am hearing that I think the undertone to the particulars that Chuck Schumer was saying, that in saying that he's out of the mainstream, that he'd be one of the most conservative justices, she doesn't say what that would mean, but I think Schumer fills that in, that he would, that there are a number of things that the Democrats believe they have gained legislative and judicially that would be threatened by Kavanaugh coming in. And I think what's interesting is it shows how important Kennedy was. Kennedy really was a swing vote. He was someone who sometimes sided with the liberals, sometimes sided with the conservatives. So both sides went into many cases thinking, well, we've got a shot, or many Supreme Court terms. I think what the Democrats are particularly worried about and what they're trying to argue is, if you're someone who likes to see the court swinging a little bit of both ways, he represents a shift to saying those days may be over. And I think she's trying to appeal to, I think, worry and concern about what that would look like without giving the particulars. But I think the particulars are things like Roe v. Wade, gay rights, health care questions going forward, and we'll see if it works. But I think that's what she's trying to at least call upon in making this claim.
I think both sides love to use the term mainstream, and then they like to position whoever the opponent is as outside of the mainstream. And it gets into, is this more of a tug of war around culture and who gets defined how we are as a country moving forward than it is anything about legal status of stuff? It seems like they're really trying to win some kind of war between two different sides.
In many ways, there's two mainstreams. I mean, they're not actually lying in the sense that they're appealing to something made up. They're really showing that there is a massive, very fundamental divide, and there is a mainstream that Dianne Feinstein runs in. There's a mainstream that many Republicans run in that look very different from each other, and increasingly, and I think this is very problematic, don't interact with each other to have any kind of common mainstream. So I think they're being genuine in saying that, but I think they're also failing to acknowledge that the mainstreams actually don't overlap with each other in many ways.
And I think, you know, when she referenced the idea of overturning Roe, again, in our country, Roe versus Wade, it's a pretty divisive issue. So to your point, defining mainstream, well, it depends on your point of view. And what do you see? Are they going to immediately begin to try to deconstruct Roe versus Wade and change the way our culture understands itself relative to abortion?
Do you mean the court?
Yeah, the court. Exactly. I mean, it seems like, you know, the fear is, right, from the Democratic side is that within 10 days of him being on the bench, this will all be overturned. But it's a bit more substantive of a process than that, right?
Well, absolutely. Well, any case that's going to be taken hasn't been accepted yet. And if you follow it, that takes a long time. And it's going to be interesting because on one hand, you could say that the court would not immediately overturn Roe, but might whittle it down, might narrow it, might make it much less strong and much less powerful in the right to an abortion that it articulates and defends. Although I would say if the court doesn't overturn Roe immediately, how much of anger and vitriol would there be on the political right that they didn't immediately do so? I think the best option, or at least the one that makes the most sense, is the one that the Supreme Court just took in Janus. That's the union rights case, or the collective bargaining case, where what they did is they had a case that was related, and they said we don't have to decide the status of this broader collective bargaining issue. We'll decide the narrow issue and say, but this bigger question is interesting, and then decide a couple more cases until finally you take one that attacks the issue itself. And that what they did is they whittled away the precedent before overturning it completely this past term. And I wonder if that might not be the best option for Roe opponents, to say, let's have a couple abortion regulations upheld that don't talk about Roe or Casey at all, and then bring up the main one in maybe 3-4 years. We'll see. Who knows what they'll actually do, but I wonder if that's a way that they could say we're not immediately overturning it, but we're showing that it no longer has the salience and power that people claimed it did.
And how many cases does the Supreme Court come up with each year that come before that they have to decide, will we take this case or not? Because they can't just set the agenda, right? They can't just say, here are the cases we want to deal with. They actually have to have cases brought before them. And how many come before them, and how do they decide?
Right. And actually, they have very free rein on what they take, too. But they get about 8,000 to 9,000 petitions to take cases. They take between 65 and maybe 85 is the norm. So about 1% or less. But what they can do is, because there's so many cases, they can and often do signal saying, we should really address this issue in a future case, which often means a case like that arises. Someone makes the litigation. And what do they look for? They look for some blatant, in their opinion, possible constitutional violation. They look for where lower courts have disagreed because they don't like the idea that a law is applied in one way in one part of the country and in a completely different way in another part. And they look for mainly ways to set up how lower courts that actually hear these 9,000 cases that they don't hear, how they will actually decide them and try to keep some consistency in the law. So the best thing you could actually have is for a law to have a law that is essentially the same to be struck down in one place and upheld in another in the lower courts. That's usually the easiest way for them to take it.
Super helpful, Adam. As always, we really appreciate you joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings. And I appreciate you bringing up on at the front the O.J. Simpson situation, if we remember that. That was actually my wedding weekend with Hallie, that the O.J. Simpson went down. So we spent the weekend getting married and following the white Ford Bronco all over the West Coast.
So so in other words, you're always trying to get back to those days.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite memories, Adam. Thanks so much. Hey, we'll look forward to chatting with you again here real soon.
That'd be great. Thank you.
We'll take a short break for Lighten Up. Ken Davis, laugh a little bit this morning and then come back with some news. Logan, we started the show with just a short update on the difficult news coming out of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin yesterday and last night when there's a gas line explosion and it leveled some of the buildings. And in just a couple minutes after the news, we're going to be joined by Dave Conower of Life 102.5 in Madison morning show over there. He'll give us some further updates. I'm not looking forward to that. So let's head to news and then we'll be joined by Dave Conower for a short update out of Sun Prairie.
Faith Radio is a media ministry of University of Northwestern St. Paul, and Faith Radio is growing. As Faith Radio reaches new areas of our nation and the world, we continue to work towards our goal of leading people to Christ and nurturing believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. If you've been encouraged through Faith Radio, let us know. You can find out more about connecting with us on our website at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.
It's 35 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we're joined on the line now by Dave Conower, who's part of the Life 102.5 Morning Show team here out of Madison, Wisconsin. And Dave, thanks for joining us. You have a quick update on what's happening out of Sun Prairie and the difficult news out of last night?
You bet. Thanks for having me. You know, for those that don't know, of course, Sun Prairie, a direct suburb of Madison, and a great community of people there who are this morning having a pretty rough time. About 500 customers now, still without gas in their home. It's about a half-mile radius around the explosion area that happened. It started with a gas leak at around 6:20 p.m. that the first reports started happening. And as crews were responding to that, an explosion happened right around 7:05 p.m. In the downtown area around Main and Bristol Streets, and that's a very popular area. We're very fortunate that more people were not hurt. There was one firefighter in the midst of fighting the blaze that did end up losing his life. Another one was injured, and some civilians were injured, taken to the hospital with minor injuries. But for the most part, at this point, it is just displaced people this morning that are out of their homes. However, there are places that have obviously opened their doors, including churches in the area. The Sun Prairie YMCA is offering their showers and daycare services for free today for those that don't have the ability to get that or that are, again, displaced by the fire. And there's always things like the Red Cross need volunteers and help, and donating blood today would be a great place to start. So this morning, it's much more about cleanup. The gas has been shut off. Again, it was a gas leak caused by some contractor work in the area, but that seems to be stopped, so there's no further damage or further danger at this point.
Yeah, it's just such difficult news, Dave, to hear about the firefighter. We didn't know that even just a half an hour ago, having lost his life, so just the trauma of that. And you mentioned, I mean, we talked about obviously praying across our affiliates here as brothers and sisters in Christ for this situation. And you mentioned being able to give some blood. Is there anything else we can do to kind of come around the situation?
Well, you know, I'm sure that as the day goes on, news outlets will start releasing more and more donation opportunities. I think at this point, as always, the first response is to help with the possibility of any health crisis that might be coming out of this. And contact the Red Cross or contact the YMCA, perhaps even to find out if there are people that are coming by with, you know, smoke-filled clothes or, you know, that they just need help just to get through the next couple of days. You know, the immediate effect of this is definitely, it's, you know, these things shock people, and you, just any assistance that you can offer is obviously extremely helpful right off the bat.
That's Dave Conower of Life 102.5 out of Madison. Thanks again for joining us this morning, Dave. Our prayers will be with you.
Thank you.
We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog and talk a little bit about the history of the Supreme Court and how we've gotten to this spot. So let's take a short break and be right back here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Should we really be surprised by what's happening in our schools? This is Jim Garlow. government has become clearly hostile to Christian faith through the misapplied concept of separation of church and state. So why should it surprise us that its most powerful tool for influencing information has become its weapon of choice to silence values contrary to its own? Our current educational system doesn't need a massive infusion of new tax revenue. It needs a rude awakening that is consumed with anti-Christian bigotry. Its reason to exist is to complement parents in strengthening the faith and moral values of our youth. But when the government does everything in their power to do the opposite, it can't be taken lightly. Who then is ultimately in charge and responsible for the next generation? As parents, we must take ownership of our children's education now. I have more to say at jimgarlow.com.
It is just about 20 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and be pleased to be joined on the line at this time by Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog, who's the Department Chair of History at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And he's going to be talking with us a little bit about the history of the Supreme Court and how we've got to this point where it's just such a powerful institution. Good morning, Jonathan. Thanks for joining us.
Well, good morning, Peter. Great to be with you. And let me commend your teaching at Northwestern as well.
Well, I appreciate that. That flattery will get you a long ways, that's for sure. So, I'm curious, you know, when the announcement came out on Monday, were you a little devastated that it wasn't Amy Coney Barrett? You know, as a fighting Irish guy yourself, and she's obviously out of Notre Dame, were you kind of cheering in those moments for a different justice? Or how are you doing right now?
Yeah, well, I'm doing okay. It is funny. I think this is one of the first times I have been updating my phone and computer down to the minute of the announcement. So that might show how I was tied into it. Yes, I'm from Notre Dame. One of the candidates, Amy Barrett, was a Notre Dame law prof, and I know a lot of people who had sat in her classes, and so I think there was a lot of fighting Irish cheering for her. It wasn't to be this time, but it would be great if she were considered sometime in the future.
Yeah, she's, my understanding is, right around 46, 47 years old, right? So there's Kavanaugh, who ultimately was the choice. He was passed over a few times before ultimately getting this nomination. So there's every chance in the future she's going to get another shot, right?
Right, and she was just elevated to the bench last year. So although I think she has great credentials, she didn't have a long history of serving in the judiciary.
Yeah.
So maybe with a little seasoning and if things break the right way, she would get another shot.
Now, for me, just getting back in the history of some of this, and maybe I just was included in the news back then, which is quite likely, but I don't remember the Supreme Court being such a contentious reality in our country. It didn't seem to even have maybe the power associated with it. Have things shifted in the last 20, 30 years relative to the power of the Supreme Court in our country?
Yeah, I think that's about the right window to be talking about things. Obviously, it's become more contentious probably since the 1950s and 1960s, as the court has made wider rulings that have been more politicized and have shaped the country more. So one piece of that is the courts have gotten more active. They've been doing more. That's gonna make it more contested. The second piece that goes into it is greater polarization across the country. So the court becomes one more battleground for what is becoming sharper and sharper divisions between parties because of, I think, very different outlooks on the world. Dare we even say worldviews? And then the third reason that this is getting more contentious is because this seat in particular, Anthony Kennedy's seat, has been very much in the middle. Kennedy was viewed as a swing vote. Yeah, he sided with the more conservative side of the court sometimes and the more liberal side of the court sometimes. And so rather than having a swing vote now, it looks like this is moving a seat definitely in a more originalist direction. And so that's going to cause people on the more liberal side of the fence to be very concerned about the pick.
And this is much more of a culture war contentiousness, right, versus like sort of a legal war. I understand they interpret the Constitution maybe through some different lenses, but we're talking about the impact on day-to-day lives of people, and specifically looking back in history at the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973. Was that kind of one of the flashpoints that really started these cultural dividing lines, or were there even decisions before that maybe we're not as aware of?
No, I think it is fair to say that Roe v. Wade, 1973, was a huge turning point. The debate over abortion was carried on across the country. It was a very robust debate, and in many states, pro-life people were having a great deal of success, even in Minnesota. This is all documented in my friend Daniel Williams' book called Defenders of the Unborn, which I would recommend to all of our listeners. Defenders of the Unborn, which shows that there was a robust debate over life before Roe versus Wade came out. And what that did was it kind of spoke from the bench, and it thought it was going to settle all of the political controversies by locking in a one-size-fits-all national policy on abortion. By finding a right to abortion in the, as they say, the penumbras of the Constitution, not in the text, but in some of the implications that some of the judges believed that they saw in the Constitution. And as one of my other scholarly friends, Andrew Lewis, has pointed out, this really caused the divide. I think this was probably the opening wedge in a lot of the culture war battles that have gone on for the last 40 years.
And you mentioned this book, too, Defenders of the Unborn. Does that give us a pretty good look and a sense of how people were thinking about this issue at that time and kind of rewinds us back in the time machine of history to get a sense of why the decisions were made the way they were?
Yeah, I think it's a really well done book. My friend Daniel Williams visited archives all over the country, again, including Minnesota. It was great to host him when he was looking in the archives one day. And what he's found is that the commitment to life crossed all kinds of borders, right? It was not one denomination. It was not one political perspective. And I think that's what the book really shows, is that people from across the political spectrum were actually very concerned about life issues. And I think part of that history, he was trying to encourage people to say, life is valuable no matter where you stand on other perspectives.
It's Jonathan Den Hartog, who's chair of history here at University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll take a short break, Jonathan, and when we come back, I would love to get your perspective on the power of the court now relative to its original vision and that the founders might have had, because your life, my life, the life of our listeners is being shaped all day long by its decisions. Has it always been this powerful, and was it meant to be that way? So we'd love to get into that with you. We'll take a short break here on Faith Radio Mornings and be back with more from Dr. Den Hartog. It's about 12 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and pleased to be joined on the line by Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog, who's a professor of history, chair of history here at University of Northwestern St. Paul. And Jonathan, before the break, referenced the idea that we sort of live in the realities of decisions that the Supreme Court has made, whether we even really know it or not. And you used the word worldview in the first segment. How maybe are some ways in which I or our listeners, our worldviews have been shaped by decisions in the Supreme Court over the last 10 years, and maybe we don't even know it?
Right. Well, it is true that the court holds a lot of power, right? That it's claimed the ability to speak broadly, and that might be described as a type of judicial activism, right? And I think that's one of the breaks that we were leading to, is that previously the court had viewed its role as interpreting statute, applying the text, for instance, of the Constitution. But since the 1950s and 60s, many in the legal professions have said, no, the court can make policy from the bench as they are a greater authority in society, and law does shape how we view the world. Many people think, well, if it's allowed, if it's legal, it must be right. And I think that's something that Christians may always need to think about. It may be legal, but is it right for us to do?
Oh, that's great. What are some suggestions you have for sort of being able to discern the difference between the law of the land, perhaps, and what it is that we're called to as followers of Jesus?
Well, again, it may be competing texts I think, how do we discern what is right for us? Let's study the scriptures, right? It's only an in-depth textual study of the scriptures that we can understand God's will, and then holding that up in conversation with what's going on in our political sphere, and recognize that there might be some some contrast, some disjunctions there in which something might be legal, but it's not morally right for us as Christians.
Yeah, that's great advice. And in terms of the original appointment of the justices, this was George Washington, I assume, that, and forgive me, you know, my history is a little lacking in this, so I love having somebody like you on to inform me on this. And these original appointments, how different was it then than it might be today relative to their power?
Well, I think the biggest thing, going back to the American founding, which is a period that I really, really love and am fascinated by, I think the biggest difference is people actually thought that the courts would not be that powerful. The passage I always love to point my students to comes in the Federalist Papers when Alexander Hamilton, you know, Hamilton's pretty popular these days, Hamilton said the courts are going to be the least dangerous branch. He said we don't have to worry too much about them because they don't have either independent will of their own or power to enforce their decisions. And so the founders, at least the authors of the Federalist Papers, thought these courts will be making decisions, but they're not really a place where we need to worry about abuses. And so it took a century and a half or so for the courts to realize, oh, we can actually do quite a bit. And the, again, the general political culture shifted to say, yeah, we're okay with the courts taking on much more roles. But again, that was not what the founders believed. Now, as to how it got set up, that's right. President Washington is the only president who has gotten to appoint the entire Supreme Court. And when he did, he looked for the best legal minds of the era. And his first Chief Justice is somebody that I care a lot about, John Jay of New York, who was very well known as a lawyer. And I'd like to point out, he was an evangelical Episcopalian Christian. And so he was the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Well, and that you reference Hamilton, too. You know, it seems like things were probably quite contentious back then, too. We tend to think that our country was all united and had the same ideas. But, you know, with the musical coming here to the Twin Cities and it's been touring all over the country, we see that perhaps it was a little bit contentious that they actually were doing duels back then. We're not at that level in the streets at this point, right?
I'm very grateful no one has we're not to duels, right? Remember that Aaron Burr, when he challenged Hamilton, was the sitting vice president. So I'm grateful that Vice President Pence has not challenged somebody in the opposition party to a duel in, say, New Jersey at dawn. So that's right. In fact, my book, Patriotism and Piety, actually looks at the religious debates in the new nation. And what we see is that people were arguing quite a bit. It was not a time of consensus, but radically different outlooks, I think, about both faith and politics were on display in the 1790s. So that's right. We shouldn't be surprised that people keep arguing about American principles. They've been doing it since the founding of the country.
And as we're sort of anticipating a shift to maybe five conservative justices and four more liberal, what do you see in the next 8, 9, 10 weeks? Obviously, they're trying to get this done before the midterm elections. And what should we look for in the process moving forward?
Right. So there'll be the Senate will be setting up confirmation hearings. I expect it will be very rough for Justice Kavanaugh. I think this is very unfair because as even people in the New York Times have pointed out, he is an entirely qualified candidate, that not only is his education really outstanding, but his practice throughout has been really outstanding. He has been serving on the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is the highest court right below the Supreme Court. He's authored very thoughtful decisions from there. I was actually reading one of his decisions before his name was announced, and I was very impressed with the historical reflection that he brought to bear in one of his decisions. And so the hope is that in the next about 2 months, hearings will be held. I anticipate they'll be very rough, but I think Kavanaugh is likely to be confirmed. So that's my prediction. That's going to be rough. It's going to be very contentious. But that at the end of the day, we will be talking about Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh.
We just have about a minute left here. And I'd be curious, you mentioned that President Washington got to appoint all nine. There's actually a reasonable chance that President Trump, this isn't the last appointment, right?
Several of the other justices are very old. One thinks especially of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as well as others. And, of course, with Justice Scalia, he passed away very unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. So and anything could happen. I assume it would have to happen next year. I believe that if an empty seat occurred in the last year of this term, that Democrats would ask for the same treatment as was accorded to the appointment from Obama, Merrick Garland, who in the last year before an election, they said, let's hold off on this and let the voters weigh in on who's going to be appointing justices.
Fascinating time here. And as you said, I'm glad we're not doing duels in the street at this point. So, Dr. Denhardt,
yeah, thanks. As long as we're avoiding duels, I'm happy.
I know. It's at least not that contentious yet. Thanks for joining us this morning, walking us through the history of this, and look forward to having you on again.
Great. Thanks so much, Peter.
We'll take a short break here on Faith Radio Mornings and wrap up our first hour. I love that Jonathan mentioned this idea about the duels in the streets and, of course, reference to all the rage going on in the music industry, a theater industry of Hamilton touring the country right now. Logan, I have to say, very fortunate. My brother and sister-in-law secured 4 tickets, and my wife Hallie and I were in the running, and we were the finalists. We are going to Hamilton when it comes here to the Twin Cities anyway in August and September.
I want to be happy for you, but I'm feeling an intense jealousy and hatred in my heart because I've never been able to even think about getting tickets.
I'm so sorry to be causing you to stumble this morning, Logan. We'll work it out together during the break. But I'd say my understanding is if you really want to go, that the lines in London are quite a bit less. For some reason, maybe they're not quite as interested in celebrating stories of the American independence.
Interesting. That's not on the top of their radar. They don't find that as beautiful historical storytelling?
I guess not. Well, it was a great first hour with Adam Carrington. We love having him on. And Dan Hartog just talking about the Supreme Court situation. We'll take a break for news. When we come back, Bill English will be joining us in studio to Bible and business.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.